This call is being recorded.
Yes.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to today's edition of the Cooking Without Looking TV show podcast. I'm here today with a very special guest, Mary Jo Partica. Mary Jo, how's it going?
Very good.
Good, good. Well, as I was telling you before, when you see Mary Jo's name, it's Party with a K-A on the end of it. So I had a hard time pronouncing it because I could just see Party there. So Mary Jo, could you tell us a little bit about yourself? Our mission is to change the way we all see blindness. Tell us about yourself.
Okay. Well, I became blind as a result of retinopathy of prematurity. That means that there was too much oxygen in the incubator, and that was happening to a lot of babies at that time because the doctors didn't realize that the oxygen was causing blindness. So, of course, the doctors weren't the ones who told my parents about it. One of the nuns in the hospital told her, so I'm sure it was a shock to them. But I was fortunate because my parents raised me to be competitive in the sighted world. The way they used to get me to do things when I was younger was I had a lot of girl cousins. So they would say, well, your cousins could do it. So if they could do it, you could do it. So, of course, I tried to emulate that. And in some cases it worked and in some cases it didn't. But they actually had fought the New Jersey Commission for the Blind because the commission wanted to send me to either the sight-saving class at Junior 2 or Overbrook, which is a school for the blind in Philadelphia. And my parents didn't like that idea, and I know I wouldn't have either if I was a parent. So they contacted the parish priest or local Catholic school and said that they wanted me to be able to attend there. And the priest said, okay, as long as they realized that I wasn't going to get any special treatment. And that was fine. So that's how my beginning life started. I attended that school from first to eighth grade, then went to St. Anthony's High School, which is now called Trenton Catholic Academy. The school's name changed at least three times since I've been there. And it was a regular regular high school where we changed classes. And I do have to admit that I did not use a cane in high school because I didn't want to be different than anybody else, but I probably should have done it because I would have been a lot better off. And
Mary Jo, I was wondering here, you said that you were put in the Catholic school and they weren't going to do anything special for you. How did you end up reading the books? Did they get you a Braille version of the books?
Oh, yes. Yes, I did learn Braille. What they meant by that was I think that they weren't going to just give me A's because I was in school. I don't think they meant that they weren't going to give me the services. At that time, the Commission for the Blind encouraged everybody who was blind to read Braille, and there was no problem. But nowadays, because one of our Bell Kids, Bell is a program that we have in New Jersey, which stands for Braille Enrichment Through Literacy and Learning. And one of the students who we have attends a Catholic school, and they will not allow them to teach Braille there, or they will not. The commission will not service him because it's a Catholic school. Which I don't know what my parents would have done if that was going on when I was growing up, but thank God it wasn't, so.
That doesn't sound right.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. It really doesn't make sense. And the thing now today, which I have a problem with too, is that in a lot of these schools where the kids attend who are blind, is they have an aide with them, which I don't think is a good idea because if you're with an aide all the time, the kids aren't going to want to hang around with you if you're with this older person who's taking you around and doing what they have to do. It's not the same. So,
well, that's unusual. How old is the person that they allow to be with you?
I don't know because I never had to have that.
Right, right. I thought maybe you knew just through the grapevine.
No, I don't. No, I really don't. But, and I'm not sure if that's the way it is in all schools, but I know that kids sometimes do have aides in school. And when you see somebody with an aide, they're not going to bother with you because they're going to think you're with your aide. I did have teachers of the commission who came and took me out of class to teach me Braille and typing and everything else like that, but nobody really commented on that too much because I still had to get my work done that I missed in class.
Sure. So you had regular friends and everyone in your class when you were younger.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And people didn't make fun. They did.
They used to make fun of my last name, and they used to make fun of some of my equipment. Yeah,
and then there's me.
Yeah. But that's normal. They made fun of each other. They I know how it was when my kids were going to school. They did the same thing to them.
Right.
Not bad, but you know how kids are.
Yeah, just that little silliness, and honestly, you probably would have felt out of place if they would have revered you and not said anything to you or teased you, just to sort of
that's right, yeah,
not tease you, just the normal teasing, not mean teasing, you know.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm.
So we left you off in high school here. How did that go?
High school went well. Math was the subject that I had the most problems with, but I got through it, and chemistry. And after high school, I actually changed colleges in the middle of it. I started off at a college called Holy Family, where I majored in Spanish, and I wasn't very happy there because there were only about 20 people who lived in the dorm. And then they said that I had to be separated, and on the first floor, because I was a fire hazard, that's what college determined. So by that time, and the fact that one of my friends was moving into her own apartment and didn't ask me to move in, I decided I needed to leave. So I actually wound up going to a Baptist college for 2 years, but I was a lot happier. I majored in social work, where I had to do field placements. And the first year, I worked in a maternity home. And the second year, I did my placement at a center for the blind in Chester, Pennsylvania, where I actually had to take trains and buses to get there and back. And I had a seeing eye dog at that time, so that made it a little better because everybody thought the dog was going to be very protective and would bite if anybody approached her, which was good. It was a safety thing for me. And the second semester of that year, I was actually able to get a driver for some of that time, which was a little bit of a relief. But every time when I came home, my parents would call me and say, "We're just checking to see if you got home, okay?" And
so that was all my parents.
I'm sorry, what?
Like all parents do, right?
Yes, of course. And after I got out of college, of course, I thought I was going to be able to get a job, the job that I wanted, and I was all eager. I had all these social work ideas and this and that, and it was not very easy to find a job. I actually went on one interview where I didn't tell the person I was blind, and it was a pretty embarrassing experience for him and for me because he didn't know how to deal with it, and I guess I was just hoping that maybe the fact that they didn't know it at the time would give me a little bit of an edge, but it didn't work out. It took me about a year to find a job, and I finally did find something. Two things. Before I found my job, I started doing volunteer work at a crisis intervention center called Contact of Mercer County, which is still in operation. And we took calls about people who had problems like alcoholism, suicide, family problems, and we had to go through a 50-hour training process where we learned active listening. And I actually learned more in that contact training about active listening than I did taking all these social work courses.
What are some of the lessons in active listening that you took away from that all of us can maybe be helped by?
Well, the thing is, what you're encouraged to do is to listen for what people's feelings are and to reflect on those feelings and to reflect back to them what they're saying, or to maybe sometime ask some leading questions like, well, what experiences have you had before? What kind of support system do you have? Something like, can you tell me more about whatever? If they're talking about something, you're a little confused. Sometime we have to be brought up to speed on it. And I actually did that for I did it for 8 years, and then I stopped doing it when I had kids because I used to do the overnight shifts. And it wasn't fair for me to be tired the next day because I was taking shifts. But after I retired from my job in 2013, I started doing it again. And I'm actually able to do it from home. We're able to forward our calls. And we had to write up reports, and it it gives me a little bit of a chance to use what counseling skills I still have.
Well, you know what, Mary Jo, I was just thinking, you know, there's a stereotype of people who are blind and that they're more intuitive than other people. Is this something you found, or you know, what did you find from your blindness that actually helped you do your job?
I don't know that my blindness really helped me to do it or not, except that I became used to listening to people when I talked to them. Even if I called somebody who was a friend of mine and they didn't sound good, I would say, well, you know, you don't sound like you're feeling too good today. What's going on? So I did probably maybe get a little bit more from the voice than maybe some sighted people would, but I'm not sure about that.
Yes, I know sometimes people will say, oh, you know, because you're blind, you pick up on this. And sometimes it's just because one of your senses isn't working, so you're not being bombarded as much. But I was
yeah,
just
that might be true.
That yeah. True. So that's
you
great.
Have to, you have to pay attention.
Right.
And I wound up getting a job with the New Jersey. It was called the Division of Public Welfare when I started working there. Now it's called the Division of Family Development. Everybody changes their names. A lot of these divisions, they want to make it sound a little bit better. But I first manned and eventually supervised an 800 number where people called about welfare, food stamps, housing assistance. And sometimes we answered questions, and sometimes we used to take fair hearing requests. And I also used to intercede for some clients who maybe would want to know, well, how come I'm only getting $200 in food stamps? How come I'm not getting more? And what I used to do was to contact the county welfare agencies to find out this information. At that time, I didn't have a computer and wasn't able to get the client's information. So I used to talk to the supervisors, and they would say, well, you know, this is what their income is, this is what their expenses are, and either they're entitled to it or maybe they're not, or maybe they would try to fix it if there was a problem. And eventually we did become computerized, and I was able to get a Braille display. And
oh, okay.
I was actually able to take hearing requests on that and write up fair hearing requests. And eventually I started writing fair hearing decisions for people who requested hearings because they didn't agree with what the agency was doing. And I did that for 15 years. And I liked that because it was more of a challenge. I really got tired of doing the hotline because I felt that people were thinking that that was the only thing I could do. And I knew I could do more than that.
Yes. You know what? I love what you're saying, because a lot of people who are blind or other disabilities don't really, sometimes they can't find jobs. And it seems like you just found your niche.
Yeah, I was lucky.
Well, you must have been.
My mother used to be a waitress at a restaurant where they served a lot of senators and congressmen. And I think they got so tired of listening to her. Finally, somebody finally said that they're going to see if they could do something. And I think that's how I actually was offered an internship, which led to a job. But yeah, I was fortunate.
No, but it's great, because one of the reasons we do the show and the podcast is a lot of people, employers especially, have never met a blind person. So they're thinking of a person who's blind is like someone that they think of from the 1950s, you know, where they feel that they don't necessarily need a job or they can't do things. And you just broke that stereotype.
Yeah, I was fortunate. The people that I worked with were nice. And I worked with a few different offices, because it seems like the state of New Jersey, they're always moving everybody around. And I was able to fit in very well with everybody. My only hard time was when I was actually supervising some people who worked on the hotline, because they didn't like where they were. I didn't necessarily like where I was listening to these calls every day or taking them if they couldn't do it. And that was a little tough because they were taking it on me. That was not the easiest thing. But I really was fortunate with people I worked with. There were situations when I was working at my last job where I had to have transportation once in a while because at that point my mother was suffering from Alzheimer's, and they would be calling my brother and I to come in and intercede if she was at the hospital or if she was at a nursing home, or, you know, I would have to get there quick to see what was going on, and people were willing to help me with things like that. I didn't take advantage of it, but there were just times when
sure
I had to get where I had to get, and people were nice, but I also think that I made it pretty easy to work with me also.
You seem like an easy person to get along with, Mary Jo.
Some people say I try to please people too much.
I guess we all try that too much.
We do.
So, and you got married?
Yes, I did. My husband is blind. It was hard for me to decide whether I wanted to marry a blind person or not. It took me a while to decide that was really okay for me, because I was so used to being in the sighted world with my friends. We would go to the movies, we would go to dinner, and I was thinking, with a blind person, we're not going to really be able to do all that stuff. Well, we can now, because there's Access Link, and there's Lyft, and there's Uber, and we don't go out as much as maybe I did when I was with my friends, but we managed to get places. We also have family members and friends who have helped us with transportation or helped us get our kids' transportation to my son played football, my daughter was in drill team, and she's a cheerleader, and we are still actually friends with some of the parents who transported our kids years ago.
You know, you said something extremely interesting that I've never heard before, that as a blind person, you weren't sure you wanted to have a blind spouse as well.
Yes. Well, I wasn't sure. And I knew my mother really didn't want me to have a blind spouse because, of course, they were thinking erroneously that a blind person two blind people couldn't take care of each other, but we do the best we can.
And your kids, how are your kids? How did that turn out, parenting as
It turned out very well. My daughter's 35. She has two little girls, and they live around the corner from us, and that's nice. So she's married and she has a nice job, and my son is in Chicago. He is working with a school district, an after school program. He has his master's. My daughter has a college degree. She went to Drexel, and he went to Duquesne, and I was happy when I paid those college bills off. It was a lot. But I'm proud of them. They're good kids. They helped us in some respects when we were younger. My husband used to like to do electronic work, so he used to have the kids tell him what color the wires are, so he knew where to plug what into.
No way.
And they helped him. And sometimes we used to walk to the grocery store because it was one that was close to us. My father used to do most of our shopping before, but if we wanted incidentals, we would walk to the store and we would get some things. And when my father died, my daughter helped us with shopping for a while, and then we got involved with the personal assistant program, where I have people who take me shopping now that are not my kids. They would do it if we had to, and my brother is really helpful too, but they also have their own lives and they have things that they have to do, so we try not to take advantage.
Well, what do you think your kids learned from having two blind parents?
I think they learned to be more self-reliant than other sighted kids. When school started, when the kids got to be at high school, I said, okay, when they used to bring home the papers for the first night where you had to sign all these things and fill out forms, I said, okay, you guys are going to have to do this. So they did, and you know, when we went places, sometimes they would be the ones who would take us around. And my son was a little bit more, I think he had a little bit of a harder time with it than my daughter did. But he said, you know, after a while he adjusted to it, and it was fine. They never said anything that they did until, I guess, my son was older. I think he was maybe reflecting on it in high school or college or whatever, and for some reason. But, you know, they're interested in people. And the thing that was interesting that I learned from them was I used to tell them that there was a that 70% of blind people were unemployed and that only 10% of blind people were working. They said, well, we don't understand that because you and Dad worked all the time. And I said, well, yeah, we did, but not everybody does. So they were used to having life the way most of their friends did, except that we couldn't see. But and I think that if anybody ever said anything about that to the kids, and made any kind of derogatory remarks, I'm sure they said it straight.
They would jump into action for you guys.
Yes. Yes, they would.
Well, do you like to cook?
Yeah, I do. I do.
What's one of your favorite recipes?
Well, one of the things that I made the other night were veal and peppers. And do you want me to tell you the recipe?
Yeah, that sounds wonderful.
All right. Well, we usually use the veal cubes, except that last week when I went shopping, they didn't have them. So we wound up getting veal chops. And when my personal assistant and I came home, she wound up cutting the veal chops or whatever. So, you know, I don't know if they had bones in them or what. But anyway, so what you do with that is we usually use about a pound of the veal cubes or chops or whatever it is. It's better with the cubes, and I don't know why they didn't have them. And we brown the meat, and then we add peppers. This time they had at the store red, orange, and yellow peppers. So I don't know what color peppers we had in there, but I'm sure it looked better than it usually does because there were more colors.
Must have been pretty.
Yes. And we also put mushrooms in there. For some reason, we started using mushrooms to bulk up the recipe a little bit. And then we put sauce, tomato paste, and regular crushed tomatoes, and let it cook for about a half hour. And then we used thin spaghetti to make with that. And
like angel hair?
Yes, yes. Or sometimes, my mother used to use a thick spaghetti, but I think we used spaghetti the other night, and it wasn't as thin as angel hair, but it wasn't as thick as the spaghetti we used to use. And it really doesn't take that long to make, and it's a pretty easy recipe.
Ah, it does. It sounds good. It's like one kettle, right?
Yeah, yeah. It is good.
So were you both cooking, you and your husband, or was it just you, or?
Well, when I was working, he used to cook because he used to get home from work around 3:45. He was a vendor. And I got home after 5 o'clock. So if they waited for me to eat, it would be 7 o'clock. And so he did most of the cooking until we retired. And now we both share the cooking experience. He enjoys cooking a little bit more than I do, but I'm doing my best to keep in there. And enjoying it.
Well, do you have any good cooking tips that, you know, I found that a lot of the tips that people who are blind use, we can all use, and it actually helps all of us. Do you have any really great tips that you love?
Well, I think one of the best tips is to have all your stuff out before you're going to cook. So you could know what you have to do before you have to do it. And to just take the time to do it. And
you just have it all in place, so you know exactly where everything is. Sure.
Yeah, and I have some recipes written out. I have a Braille note taker, which I have some recipes on, and I think I have some in. I have some when writing too, but I actually and sometimes I'll look in a book and I can find a recipe or something like that, or somebody will give it to me, but. Yeah, having the things in place and making sure you have the things that you need from the grocery store before you're going to be cooking.
Sure. Do you have a story for like ever starting something off and realizing you didn't have all of the pertinent ingredients?
Yeah, we actually did have one experience. This was years ago when my father used to do our shop, and I don't remember if it was chicken or pork or what it was going to be, and I don't remember what we were going to make. So we were looking for the ingredients, and we couldn't find it. So either me or my husband called my mother to ask if my father had gotten whatever it was that we needed. And she said, no, he didn't get it because it was expensive.
Oh, no.
So I don't remember what we had that night, but it wasn't what we were going to have.
Oh, no. So they
were looking out for us, but sometimes it wasn't always to our benefit.
But
that doesn't happen now. Yes.
Well, you know, a lot of stores now, like I know down here in Miami, we've got the Publix that they do the shopping for you. You just go online and you fill out whatever you want, and they pick it up and they deliver it for you.
Yeah, we haven't done that. We started doing it this year with Whole Foods, and the reason why we're doing it with Whole Foods is because we're, first of all, we're Prime members, and you get free delivery.
Oh.
Prime membership. So we've been ordering from there for about maybe 5 or 6 months. And we don't order everything from there. We still have to go to the grocery store because Whole Foods doesn't have everything. And some things we may not like that they have, or like my grandchildren, they like a certain kind of cheese, and we get sharper cheese if we're going to use it in something than they like to have, like on their pasta or whatever. So there are just certain things that we get at the grocery store and not Whole Foods. But the reason why we stayed away from doing the online thing is because I think it costs more for the delivery. Although I saw in a book that somebody put out recently that if you pay Instacart $35 a year or something like that, that you would have free delivery. But I'm not actually sure if that's true or not.
Oh, that's interesting. I'll have to look that up and see. I didn't realize that. Yeah, because I see the Instacart people like dashing about the store and filling everything out. Honestly, I love, I love to just go in the store. That's my favorite kind of shopping, is grocery shopping. I just like wander around and decide what I'm going to put in whatever dish I'm making that day. So
I like it too.
Yeah, it's like part of the whole cooking experience.
It is. It is. And we found, I have a personal assistant who comes every 2 weeks, and then I have somebody who comes the week that she isn't there, and the weeks that she isn't there, who's a person from Interfaith Caregivers, which is a volunteer organization. They help you with errands and shopping. So she comes every other week. So, and my daughter and my brother said they would help us with shopping if we needed it to, and eventually, occasionally they do, but they don't have to do it too much.
Sure, it's difficult sometimes to ask people to go do something for you.
Well, you know what? They do so much for us now.
Sure.
And it's not the fact that they really necessarily do a lot, but it's the fact that they're there if we need them.
And that's the best thing, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And we babysit our granddaughters every Thursday and every other Friday and whenever else. My daughter and son-in-law need a babysitter, and my son-in-law's parents also help, so it's a joint effort.
Oh, that's great. So you have to actually teach your children's spouses what about blindness. I bet they were a little nervous about leaving the kids with you guys.
I think they were at the beginning. Even my daughter, I think, was a little nervous about it at the beginning. But she saw that they saw that we were able to do it, so they relaxed after a while. But I think they were nervous about it. And sometimes I think people have trouble understanding that. But I think you're right, because the spouses may have been more nervous than the kids,
Sure. Yeah, and once you understand a person who's blind, you don't really, you don't have anything to worry about. I kind of think that people who are blind are sometimes more aware or thinking more than the rest of us with sight. Tell you, I've never got the best driving lessons or the best driving directions I've ever gotten were from totally blind people.
How about that? Isn't that interesting?
Wow. It is. And you would never think that, but like, because you're in tune to things that we're not. We just take things for granted, and you're in tune to all the different feelings around you.
Yes. Yeah, that's true. But, we are fortunate, because my son-in-law, he got it. He you know, was able to deal with the blind thing pretty well, and so was my son's girlfriend, same thing. You know, they pitch in and they help out, and they don't have a problem. You know, it's never been a problem. It was just, I think it was something they had to get used to, but
sure.
They never said anything about having a hard time to us, but I guess it's hard if you're not used to it, maybe.
Sure. Well, Mary Jo, if any of our listeners want to reach out to you, how can they get a hold of you?
My email address is choir, C-H-O-I-R. N is in Nancy, F is in Frank, B is in boy, @gmail.com. And the reason the choir thing is part of my email is because I sing in two of them. One's a contemporary and one's a regular choir. And I also canter in front of the congregation every once in a while.
Very nice. I was wondering about that because when I saw your email, I'm like, oh, she must be in the choir at church.
Yes, yes. And my phone number is 609-888-5459.
Well, thank you, Mary Jo, for spending time with us today. It's been very enjoyable, and I can tell why you were so beloved on the phone when people called in for help.
Well, thank you. I hope that my delivery was okay as far as not using expressions like and you know and all that kind of stuff.
We all do it, Mary Jo, so don't you worry. And thank you again, and thank you to all of our listeners. This has been Renee Rentmeester along with Mary Jo, and we're Cooking Without Looking TV show and podcast. We're changing the way we see blindness, and if you want to reach out to us, it's www.cookingwithoutlookingtv.wordpress.com. Thank you very much and have a wonderful day.
Renee, how do I get to your podcast? Oh.